Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we flick through old copies of Reader's Digest and chat with our buddies as we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Nick.
I'm Chris Adams. Why do you just say Nick now? Where's the surname gone?
Oh, did I used to say McKinnon, did I?
Are you trying to hide who you are?
Now that I'm a stay-at-home mother, Chris, we drop our surnames and we just pick up the surname of our partner. So I'm now, I don't even know if my wife would want me to say her surname. She might get crazy at me. She hates her surname. Was so desperate to drop it when we got married. I was like, you know, if you want, you can keep your surname. Or if you like, you know, we can do the hyphenated thing. And she was like, hell no. Why do you think I'm marrying you? It's not you. It's your surname. I said, all right.
McKinnon. Yeah, that
McKinnon.
Works. It works.
I'm not trying to disown my family, Chris.
Nothing wrong with McKinnon.
Part of the problem, Chris, is that I stumble over my name when I say Nick McKinnon.
Oh, yeah. Lots of
it gets all messy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nicholas J. McKinnon is fine. I can pronounce that perfectly. So if you'd like me to go all Samuel L. Jackson on you.
No, I wouldn't like that because I don't have a middle name and I always felt left out because of that.
You can just make it up yourself.
Well, I did that a lot through my childhood. I made up all sorts of middle names.
What'd you come up with?
It was a stupid one. Like one when I was younger, there was Webb. I don't know why.
About Fester?
No, I had Topher because I'm Chris. I'm just Chris. I'm not a Christopher. So I had Topher.
Yeah, that's good.
No, but let's just say it's danger and we'll move on. Yeah.
All right. So this week, Chris.
Yeah.
I thought we'd talk about a bit of a rising phenomenon in our part of the world.
Mm.
It's not planking. It's not selfies. It's not Pokemon Go. I'm probably showing my age. That's probably like 2 years ago.
I was thinking when you said planking, I'm going, yeah, right, okay.
What are new ones?
Oh, no, I'm old too. It's okay.
Even fidget spinners are dated.
Yeah.
We're both old. Oh, no. I'm an old person. Yeah, anyway, I thought we'd have a look at this idea of being spiritual but not religious.
Mm.
Is this something you've come across?
Yeah.
Has it seemed to be an increasing thing to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Considering that I mark myself as one of them, so I have come across it. It was interesting, like the last census that came out, we've got more and more people not identifying as religious than ever before. But of young Australians, which we are not because we're old, of young Australians, 48%.
Fidget spinners, Chris, fidget spinners.
They're not religious. About 48% of them would claim that they're not religious in that census, whereas it's more like 30% across all ages. But 48% not religious, but almost half of them, if there had have been a tick a box thing of I'm spiritual but not religious, almost half of them would have ticked that. So there's a large number of people who are not religious anymore but still consider themselves spiritual.
Mm.
There's even a I went looking for it on Wikipedia. There's even a term. There's a SBNR.
Oh, they've got their own acronym.
Yeah, there's an acronym. Spiritual, but not religious.
You know you go in places when you got an acronym.
There's a second one, which is SBNA, which is spiritual, but not affiliated. So these are popular phrases, apparently. I've just come across the acronyms.
Do you think this is related to, like, our culture seems to be less willing to identify with any institution? Do you think it's part of that or is it different to that?
Well, I think it is that. I think when institutions have done wrong by the community in big ways, that has a part to play. When institutions feel old and stuffy, that has a part to play. So it is a walk away from institutions. In one sense, I don't mind that because we encourage young people to not just let anyone just tell them what they should think, you know, to try and figure it out for themselves. And religion's often sort of part of their whole thing is to tell you what you should believe. And so people are going, no, I'll figure it out for myself. Thank you very much.
That sounds a bit arrogant. You're talking me into being a religious person, Chris. I don't want to be arrogant. And I think we can learn something from past wisdoms.
Oh, damn absolutely. It, but that's what most people do. They pick little bits of this bit of wisdom and that bit of wisdom. And they, because I think people are searching for something. You know, if there's half of that group that aren't religious are still wanting to be spiritual, there's something that they're seeking or something that they're not finding within a secular society or in a, you know, materialistic world. And they are drawn to something and they're taking bits and pieces from all over the place, but they're not just affiliating themselves with an institution.
As Sam Harris says, it sounds like these people are searching for the diamond in the dunghill of organized religion.
Yeah. Is there one?
Well, you just said you're spiritual but not religious.
Well, so I'm searching too.
You're an SBN.
I am. What I found really interesting was in their description of what that means in the Wikipedia page, just describing what it is to be spiritual but not religious, is used to self-identify a life stance of spirituality that takes issue with organized religion as the sole or most valuable means of furthering spiritual growth. And I was like, well, yeah, okay. I take issue with organized religion, so okay. I can self-identify with spiritual but not religious. That works. So I do have issue with organized religion, but I'm not going to write, you know, religion. I don't know. I guess we need to sort of – so what's the difference between religion and spirituality? I sort of have my own definitions because I call myself a Christian and some people go, well, you're religious. And I go, okay, if that's what you say, that's fine. You know, that's your definition because I've claimed that I'm a Christian, so I belong to this organized religion, I guess. But for me, religion, the way I see religion is that, you know, it's a response to God, but it's a man-made structure. And within that structure, you know, then you've got people pointing you towards God, but also telling you, you know, how to find God, what you're meant to do. And so it's this man-made structure because for me, like if God exists, God existed before religions. Religions are man-made. They're not made by God. Some may claim that Jesus started the church. That's another thing we might get into later.
Well, Jesus said he didn't come to start a religion.
Yeah, but Christianity, the church, I don't know if it was meant to be just mere religion. But yeah, so for me, religion is this man-made structure. And so do we need it? Because I've been really interested in looking at a religionless Christianity as sort of espoused by Dietrich Bonhoeffer and built upon by others like Peter Rollins. And so I've been looking a lot into this. So when you suggested this is a topic for us to talk about, I was like, yeah, yeah, I'm keen.
Which is unusual for when I suggest topics.
So that's my definition of religion. Spirituality I sort of see as, you know, our desire to understand ourself, feel connected to ourself, connected to others, connected to the world around us, the environment, and connected to, I guess, this thing called the beyond, be that the bigger picture or universe or mystery, whatever, but connected to this thing that's outside of ourselves. So we're drawn to that. That's spirituality for me. So I see them as sort of separate. What about you? How would you define religion and how would you define spirituality? Do you think you can be spiritual but not religious?
Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
Definitely. Like I think I would say that I am too. Hmm. That's one of the funny things that you and I have differences in the way we see how that plays out in terms of our beliefs. But yeah, I think I would say that I'm an SBNR too.
Hmm. I would say that you are as well.
There you go. Yeah. We're part of the same clan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right.
Yep. We can end this podcast. It was interesting listening to your definitions of religion and spirituality because I think I agree with almost all of it with just a couple of slight differences. I think I see the word religion slightly different to you in that it sounded to me like when you were defining religion, you were specifically talking about organized religion.
Mm.
Whereas for me, religion is simply just sort of a structure or a worldview that talks about the connection with the supernatural, with the divine creator.
Mm.
So to me, that's what religion is. And so that is neither good nor bad. Well, I don't know. It's probably not bad, hopefully. Whereas when you start talking about organized religion where the person up the front starts telling you how to behave and, you know, what to do with your penis and your vagina and how many times you have to pray a day and which direction you have to face and which people you have to hate and all those sort of things, well, then it starts to turn pretty toxic. So, yeah, I think there's a difference between organized religion and religion. And I think the reason we in the West have sort of come to see the word religion as so negatively is because our religion has been so structured, because it has been so organized. And I think there's a lot of people realizing that it doesn't necessarily have to be that way, that we don't have to just do whatever these people in the robe say because they're pretty fucked up. They rape little boys and then they lie and they don't pay their taxes and all these sort of things. And so as we've become more disillusioned with that, people have started to discover religion away from the structured side of it, which is, I think, is what you do. Like, I think you are religious, but not organized religious.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in terms of spirituality, you talked about the connection to yourself, connection to others, and the connection to the beyond or something along those lines.
Yep.
And I agree with almost all of that, except, like, I'm not certain about this bit at all, but the part I'm learning more about at the moment and, I don't know, wrestling with is the idea of a self, that there is a self there for us to be connected with. Certainly, I would see spirituality as about connection, about being connected to life, I suppose I would probably say. But I don't know about connection to self, because the more I've looked into it, the less I've been convinced there is a self there. Like if I say to you, think of a famous person, who have you got?
Yeah, okay. I was just going Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Does it matter if they're alive or dead?
No, it can be Dietrich Bonhoeffer. That's fine.
All right.
So why did you choose him?
He's just in my head because this is part of what we're talking about. Well, okay, let's pick Thomas Merton instead, because when you're talking about a true self, I was thinking of Thomas Merton.
Okay.
He was a monk in the Catholic tradition, but then also went on to explore Buddhism a little bit. But anyway, yeah, Thomas Merton.
Did you choose for his name to pop into your head?
Not really, no.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer just popped into your head.
Yep.
Because you'd been thinking about it previously.
Yep.
And then Thomas Merton popped into your head because you'd been thinking about the idea of the self and,
yes,
and Buddhism and meditation and all those sort of things.
Yep.
There's this idea that I think a lot of us operate with, sort of unconsciously. We think that we are the thinker of our thoughts, that it's not just that thoughts arise, but it's that we actually are the agent in creating those thoughts. Like, I haven't done heaps of meditation, but the more you do it and the more I've read about it, the more you go, oh, yeah, I really don't choose any of these things that pop into my head. They just happen. Like, when my son starts being a pain to me, I don't choose to get angry. Like, if I chose it, like, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably choose to do it differently. Mm. I'd probably choose my words differently, but it just happens and the biology kicks in.
Yeah.
And away it goes.
Well, interesting, because I said before that I try and live by this particular creed, which was based around your beliefs and your values, and they inform the things that you think about. And the things that you think about become the things that you do, which becomes the sort of character you are, which becomes, you know, the habits you develop and the life you're going to have and the sort of destiny you end up with. And it all starts with the things you think about, but what informs the things you think about. And so this is what Thomas Merton, one of the big things for him, and I got onto Thomas Merton because one of our listeners, Michael Balding, this is a fair way back, but he said, oh, can you guys do some stuff on Thomas Merton and mysticism? And I went, oh, that sort of plays into what we're talking about tonight. So I went and revisited a bit of it. And he talks a lot about the real self and the false self. He started off as someone just living in the secular world and was very lost and searching for most of his young life for meaning, I guess, and eventually came to religion, came to Catholicism, and became a monk and wrote some books. But he was someone who was always sort of constantly evolving and trying to figure it out. So being a monk, that's a weird thing as well, because we're talking about this new phenomenon of people who are like engaging in all of these mindfulness and, you know, meditation stuff and yoga and all of this sort of stuff, as if it's this new thing, you know, that's never been done before. But monks have been contemplating the self and God, you know, and the beyond and whatever for a long, long time. But it used to be seen back then that that was reserved just for monks, you know. One of the things that he did was to come out and say, no, we all can contemplate, you know. He was talking about the real self and the false self and trying to discover that real self. And I guess that's where contemplation takes you, you know, within some sort of solitude and silence, is that you can try and figure out who you are. For him, it's about being, you know, figuring out who you are and allowing that to be and to not have all of this false self stuff there. Because it's not like you're saying, it's not like you're necessarily choosing it every second, but, you know, like, how do you get to a purer form of yourself or even a God-made, God-given form of yourself. So how do you connect with that? How do you let that shine forth and then inform the things that you think about, you know, and the actions that you take? Oh, he was really interesting. So he went from searching about all of this stuff about the self, and then as he matured, he went, oh, it's not just about the self, it's about others. And then as he matured more, he went, oh, it's not just about my religion, it's an interfaith religion, you know, and he went exploring all sorts of different places. But he's just informed a lot about mysticism and contemplation in a lot of faiths. He's been, yeah, been really formative behind that. So that was the guy I was thinking of. I feel like we do have a real self, but what is that? Yeah, what is that real self? How do you find it? That's what people are looking for, isn't it?
Well, part of the problem is the more you look for it, the more you'll realize that there's nothing there for you to find. So when we think that I'm Nick and you're Chris, and we think that there's some boundary of me and some boundary of you, like the most extreme cases, we might think that it's our skin, like no further than that. But then, like if I get my skin burnt off in some fire, I'll still be me. Or if I have my arms cut off, I'll still be me. And you can even get down to the point where, like, we feel real connection to what we see because our brain has a fairly large spot where our eyes connect in, real, very visual creatures. But, you know, you can lose your eyes and you'll still be you. And you can get all the way down to the point where they've done studies where they can somehow like switch off half of your brain. Like I guess maybe they do that when they're doing surgery on one half of your brain or something.
Yeah.
And so you can still be conscious.
Yeah.
Even though you've only got half your brain going. And then you can, you know, switch the other side of the brain off and put the other side of the brain on and you'll still feel conscious.
Yeah.
So there's no one spot there where you exist.
Yeah. How does that say that you don't have a self?
There's no one spot there for yourself to be.
Right.
So unless you're just the collection of all of it, but then you can't just be the collection of all of it because you can lose half of it and still be you.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I'm not sure what I reckon. Like, yeah, they say 80% of what we think and do in adulthood is habit, but there's got to be some leeway for the will and from the seat of the will to choose, I think, based on beliefs and values that shape those habits, which is hard work. But, yeah, fascinating. Where is the self? I don't know. I mean, do we head towards something unscientific to answer? Soul, spirit?
This word spirituality, we often think of the word spirit as being connected to some ethereal component of us that, like, people talk about that their body is just, you know, the vehicle that they're driving around in, and then when they die, they'll be off with their spirit, or they're not off with their spirit, they are their spirit. You would have heard that sort of idea.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a fairly common concept of what spirit would be.
Yep.
Well, so the word spirit, that's not what the word spirit meant initially. So it came from, I'm a bit of a Latin scholar, you would know this, Chris. So it comes from the Latin word spiritus, which is a translation of the Greek word pneuma, which I'm sure you've heard the word pneuma before.
Yeah,
because
Rob
we're
Bell.
Both Rob Bell fans.
Yeah.
They're great videos. Yeah. If you're a Christian, please go and watch pneuma. Even if you're a non-Christian, they're really good. And so the word pneuma, have you heard Rob Bell explain what pneuma means?
I do not remember, but I have heard it.
The Greek word pneuma is about breath.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about spirit at all. Indeed, like Greek has a completely different word for soul, which is interesting, is psyche, which is where we get the word psyche from.
Right, yep.
Which is interesting in its own way. But yeah, so the idea that spirit is a synonym for the word soul, that's a fairly new idea. It's certainly not where the word came from. And so the idea of being spiritual but not being religious is, in terms of, is it epistemology?
Epistemology, etymology, I don't know.
One of those ones. Where the word came from.
There's all sorts of ep words.
Yeah, where the word came from had nothing to do with soul.
Okay.
And so absolutely you can be spiritual and not have any supernatural component to it whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm aware of the link between spirit and breath.
The word Yahweh is meant to be something to do with your breath, like breathing in is Yah and breathing out is Way or something like that.
Yeah. You breathed into man. So you're saying that the concept of spirit and soul is a new thing.
Yeah.
Does it being a new thing make it any less valid as an understanding? Because we do that a lot with language. We change their meanings, but as long as the common understanding still communicates something between people.
Yeah. Well, that's all that matters, isn't it?
Well, it's
frustrating. Who cares what the word used to mean?
Oh, it's frustrating sometimes.
This was part of the marriage debate, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You can't redefine a word. Well, of course you can. We do it all the time.
Yeah. We get precious about some words. I get precious about some words.
Do you?
Yeah. I'm like, no, that's not what it means. But then I'm like, oh, well, that's what it means now, I guess. I've got a question for you, Nick.
Shoot.
All right.
Myself will answer it.
So you're spiritual but not religious. So I want to know, why do you think religion doesn't matter? Or I guess even in that it does matter in the sense that it matters that we shouldn't have it, we should be getting rid of it. This should be an easy question for you to answer. You can bash the church.
No, not at all.
No.
All
right, I'll bash the church.
No, get out of it. So unlike many atheists, and I'm not an atheist either, like I think a lot of atheists don't give religion its dues. Like religion has done a lot of good in the world and there's been evil done by people who are religious as well, but it's done a lot of good as well.
Mm.
So, you know, you don't just talk about one side of it without talking about the other side of it. Both can be true. Like Christopher Hitchens used to ask a question every time he was debated where he would say, name one thing that an atheist can't do that a believer can do. And of course, there's nothing. There's nothing that an atheist can't do that a believer can also do. Then he would say, name an evil thing that a religious person could do that a atheist wouldn't do. And, you know, there's hundreds of them. You know, suicide bombing is the most obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But the disingenuous part of that is that even though atheists can do everything that religious people do, every positive thing that a religious person can do, atheists can do it as well. The difference is that if you believe that you are being judged every second of every day based on how good you are to other people, you have got an incentive to be as good as you possibly can. And so that really is a driving force for a lot of people to do good in the world. I think that's worth acknowledging. Now, I don't think that means you can't force yourself to believe something that you don't believe. But I think it's worth acknowledging that belief in a judgmental God that wants you to be as good as you possibly can, that has benefits to society, not necessarily to the individual, but to society it does.
Mm.
So no, I'm not into religion bashing.
No.
I'm into calling it out when it does shitty things.
Yep.
And I'm into calling it out for the stupid beliefs that it has.
Did you read that book by Alain de Botton, the atheist, about religion for atheists, I think it was called?
No, I haven't. I've seen talks by him and he sounds like a fascinating dude. Seems like a nice dude.
No, I really like...
Well, have you read it?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about it then.
Oh, it's been a while. But I really like what he had to say. So what do atheists miss out on by not being part of a religion? And so, you know, he was mostly talking about community, really. This a sense of community, a sense of the sacred, things that matter to human beings, you know, a lot. Ritual, they miss out on, on ritual, which can be important. I mean, that's the one thing that seems old and fuddy-duddy often is religious rituals, and they're things that we don't necessarily need, but they can have positive effects on human beings. You know, we're creatures of habit, so.
Mm. And if someone has just died,
yeah,
where are you going to go?
Yeah.
You're going to go to a church to get a funeral done. And the belief that the person that you've loved isn't just dead and going to rot in the ground, but is actually departed this world and is in bliss and is just loving every minute of things now, that's a lovely idea.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think atheism does have an issue in terms of, ritual I think is a big one, in terms of working out how do we look at death, I think, is one of the big ones. Like, how do we talk about it?
Yeah. He was talking about starting up essentially, like atheistic churches in a way where people could come together. And I don't know if it would work, but that was his concept. But I think, community is important, which I actually find interesting because I'm spiritual but not religious. And I haven't been to church for a long time. And I get.
You gave up the church, but you. Well, you kept the spirituality.
Yeah, but there's a teacher at school who goes to church and she comes up to me regularly about, two or three times a term and says, so, have you found the church community yet?
Just say yes.
I say no. And I explain that I haven't found the church community because I'm not really intending to. I'm not really looking for one, and why.
No, just say you're waiting to hear God's voice. I'm waiting for God to instruct me.
I want to be genuine and honest. And so she listens to me and her genuine and honest response is, okay, well, I'm going to keep asking you, a couple of times each term if you've had a church community yet, because she thinks that I should, because she can see the good in a church community, in that, you know, you surround yourself with community, which can, you know, can keep you accountable at times. It can mean that you're part of a group that can, you know, do good things together. You share in each other's worlds. There are a bunch of, you know, it's called fellowship. So I am for fellowship. I love fellowship. I just don't. I don't get it at church. I try and get it elsewhere. You know, so like I remember, I was going to a march called the Lighting the Dark March. It wasn't even a march. Lighting the Dark Gathering, whatever. It was
vigil.
Yeah, it was a vigil. We had candles.
I know. I went to it.
Right. Yeah. So we. Yeah. It was all around Australia. So that was about refugees, and I went to that as my wife and I were rocking up there, and we were walking the streets of the city and watching all of these people just walk the other way. But then as we got closer, there was a lot of people walking in the same direction as us, gathering in the same area, all with smiles on their faces. And there was this real feeling of peace and this, I don't know, there was this thing in the air. And, you know, Biz turned to me and said, "This is what church should be like." And I was like, yeah. I used to go to church a lot. I don't remember driving to church, getting excited, you know, about, oh, what's this going to be like? Oh, this, and we're going to be doing something purposeful. And I just didn't get excited about it. I found it a bit of a chore. Whose fault is that? Is that mine? it wasn't horrible. Like, there was fellowship, there was community. Like, the best bits for me wasn't church. It was afterwards when everyone would sit around eating and drinking. That was church for me.
The best bit for me wasn't even church. It was the soccer we would play afterwards.
Yeah.
Or it was like the Bible studies we'd have where we'd actually have real conversation.
Yeah.
Whereas it Sunday morning, you don't have any real conversation. It's just, hey, how are you? Good. How's your week been? Good. Brilliant. Thanks.
Yeah. Whereas, yeah, so having someone up the front of a church giving you a sermon, they talk about it in education as well. You know, it's called banking education. There's banking education and dialogical education. Banking is you keep drumming the same thing into their heads over and over again and building it up so that the information is there. Let's do some more maths. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. Dialogical education is when we sit around and we talk about it and we explore it together. And that's actually more effective, but harder to do. So, yeah, just that sitting in
pews. It's more effective for the individual.
Right.
Like if you're running like a class where there's 30 kids and one teacher, it may not be as effective.
Yeah, it's hard to do in that size of class. Yeah.
Yeah, in a church situation where, you know, every person there's an adult and they're responsible for their own learning in a sense.
Yeah.
They're all capable of sharing their own views and listening and, you know, they're choosing to be there, which is a big part, whereas school you're not choosing to be there, you're forced to be there.
Yep.
Yeah. One of the things that I wonder, though, is that this idea of being spiritual but not religious is that are you turning religion into like sort of the opposite of what Alan de Botton is trying to do, where he's trying to make some organized thing out of atheism, where you're turning religion into every individual person has their own individual religion.
There's a problem. I think there's a problem with doing that. So I do worry about, you know, not being part of a church community, and there's this little gnawing voice saying, yeah, I think maybe you should be, but I'm able to keep that at bay. But, yeah, I think there is a problem in, you know, I'm part of the argument from the church. They're saying, why do you need church? Why do you need religion? You know, in the face of this sort of phenomenon that we're talking about, one of their arguments is that the problem with individualized spirituality is you end up with a lack of community and accountability. And one thing that really counts for me is that you end up with a lack of an impact on the world. If it's just about the self, if it's just about your own internal world, and then your spirituality doesn't really engage with the world, I think it's pretty useless if it doesn't engage with the world in some way. Now, you can argue it can be about the self and you can still engage with the world if there is a self, that trying to discover your real self, you know, is trying to create a way that you will be in the world. You know, if you've got a positive spiritual connection there somehow, then you will be who you're meant to be. But I do worry that if it's just an internal response, if it doesn't engage with the world, then like a lot of people might like that. It's like, you know, well, keep your beliefs and your spirituality to yourself, you know, but if it doesn't have an impact on the world, then, you know, all the good things that you were saying that religion has done to the world, that can go missing. That's a problem for me, because Thomas Merton ended up going from just talking about the self to, oh, damn it, no, I need to do social justice. I'm part of the world. Everyone is all these people, all my neighbors, all these non-religious people, we're all one. I'm no different from them, and we need solitude, you know, being monks, that sort of thing. I don't know if that's very effective. So, yeah, contemplation is great, but if you don't engage with the world around you, I don't get it. And that's one thing with Christianity is often religion talks up that the world is evil and our flesh is evil. And
yeah,
and
you're a sinner.
You know, so they're like, you're not part of the world. Turn your back on the world and just turn to God. And I'm like, that is just bullshit. That's bullshit. Yeah. That's what I really liked about Bonhoeffer's religionless Christianity was he would talk about, I can't remember the quote. Part of it was like getting rid of God and living fully before God. And in that way, you sort of live how you're meant to live. But so he argued that faith was really about giving ourselves, not to God, but giving ourselves to our neighbor, to even, you can say, the God within people around you, whatever, but to our neighbor, to our communities, to enjoying life, to enjoying it, you know, to getting the most out of life, but also to committing to make the world a better place and to helping others. Just being loving and being creative and social justice, all of that makes a life fully lived, and that fulfills what Jesus essentially calls you to. For him, in this religionless Christianity idea, wasn't about what you believe, but it's about a way of being, which again sort of goes back to the Thomas Merton thing. It's being. So how does your spirituality inform how you be? He was writing these letters from prison when he developed this sort of idea of a religionless Christianity, because he was in prison for plotting to kill Hitler. And ultimately he was executed. But before he was executed, he was sending out letters, developing this religionless Christianity thing because he saw Christianity, at least from going away from religion, being necessary. And he found that he was much more drawn to religionless people than religious people. He was more comfortable around people that weren't religious.
I wonder if that's because of the connection that the church had with Nazi Germany.
It probably had a part to play because, I mean, part of his whole, I guess, frustration was that the church wasn't able to stop, you know, Nazi Germany from happening.
Well, not just not able to stop it, they were heavily engaged in it. Like every SS soldier had God on our side engraved in their belt.
Yep, but I just found it interesting because I relate in that I find myself not drawn to church and hanging around religious people. I'm drawn to working at a school or going to like a vigil around social justice.
I think you and I are drawn to talking with people who don't claim to have it all sorted out.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem with organized religion is that people walk around with this idea that you can't possibly share my doubts. And so it turns into this place where all we talk about is the things we're certain of. Whereas we like talking about, I don't know, I've got doubts, I don't know. Mm. I want to be able to be honest that I don't know what's going on here. I don't know what's going to happen after we die. I don't know if there really is a God. And I think you and I both also really like hearing other people's ideas.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't experienced everything in the world. There's other people that have experienced other stuff. I want to get their perspective.
And I think that's a lot what's happening with this phenomenon. That's what people are doing a lot is they're contemplating, they're listening to different bits of wisdom and ideas.
And it's interesting because both of us, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, Chris, I think both of us believe that if there is a God, then he's not tied to any one religion, that he's bigger than any one religion.
Yeah.
So he's not, there isn't a Christian God. There isn't a Buddhist God or an Islamic God. Like, I know you believe Jesus was the Son of God and died and was resurrected and all that sort of stuff. So I guess you probably do think that God is probably more connected with Christianity than other religions, maybe.
Yeah, that's a hard one to answer.
Sorry, I didn't mean to give you a hard question to answer on this podcast.
I think a faithful, you know, response to all of that is that I don't know it all and I'm a follower, yeah, but I have to approach it with some humility and not claim that I have any special knowledge of it all. So obviously from my cultural context that I was born into, within every different religion, people are born into these sort of cultural understandings. And if I'm born in a Muslim country, I'd be Muslim. I'm born here. It's pretty easy to understand that I'd be Christian. So I try and believe that God isn't just specially for the Christians. I try and believe that. But there is this hangover cultural. God makes more sense to me within Christianity than not. So yeah, I'm open to everyone, but yeah, I am biased.
And so you would think that Buddhists or Islamic people, Muslims, that's the word, like people in other religions having religious experiences, you would say that they are true spiritual experiences in the same way that you would have or any other Christian would have a true spiritual experience. It's not like theirs is fake and yours is real.
No.
Is that right or wrong?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yep.
So do you believe that atheists can have spiritual experiences as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Are you talking about a spiritual experience or a religious experience then?
No, spiritual. Yeah. Because, well, I guess our definitions would come into play there. But for me, the religious experience would have to be connected to a transcendent being.
I think a spiritual experience can be, you know, as simple as you look at the tree after a sun shower has gone through and you're watching the refracting light through the droplets of water. A lot of people talk about surfing as spiritual. And I like that because there is this sort of sense of solitude and quiet out there. So I don't necessarily see a spiritual experience have to be, oh, I felt the presence of God. When I say that everyone can have a spiritual experience, yeah, because you're in touch with something, some bigger picture. You know that even though you might have a sense of self, if that exists, that you are a part of something. For me, it's part of something bigger that has meaning.
Mm.
That's what it comes down to for me is you read meaning into it. Like if you just go, oh, I'm part of this global world, but if it doesn't move you in some meaningful way, then that's not really a spiritual experience, is it?
No. I think often a lot of us, certainly in the West, I think often our personal experience of life is a sense of loneliness, that we're different to other people and we feel separate to other people.
Yeah.
And I think these religious experiences are moments like that are the opposite of this, where we just go, holy crap, I'm connected with something else, with other people or with something bigger than that. That's why they're so powerful and so beautiful, because they run counter to that normal experience that we have for the rest of our life, which is negative and destructive.
Thomas Merton, he'd been in the monastery for a long time and he came out. He had to go see a doctor or something. So he went out into the normal town and he was watching all of the people crossing the bridge, watching the cars go back and forth. And it hit him. It just hit him. Oh, they're the same as me. We're all one. We're all connected. And he said it was like everyone was just shining with light. You know, boom. Oh, I get it. Oh, what have I been doing just sitting in my own little room praying for so long? That's not all that there is. There's more to it. There's more. Yeah. So he kept exploring and I like the idea of that all of your beliefs, you just got to hold them lightly, you know, lightly enough to be surprised by a moment or experience.
Yeah.
And be contemplative and look around. And within those moments, that's when you have those spiritual experiences, whether you call that a experience of God or not. I remember looking at trees and just marveling at trees. How the hell does that thing do everything that it does?
Yeah.
It's alive. There's life everywhere. People in cars driving past me, I'm like, oh, that person's got a life. They have thoughts and feelings and a family and dreams and desires and guilt and shame. And they've got it all too. Everyone.
Not just them. And Pilot.
Yeah, absolutely. I see eternity in my dog's eyes.
Stop using that word to mean something that it doesn't mean. Get out of it.
No, it's the eternity ward. I'll throw that word around as much as I want.
See, now you've turned me into the person that does care about how you use words. Now I'm the defender of traditional marriage. You can't redefine the word.
Well, that's fine. I can change that word. I see a connection to the beyond within my dog's eyes. There you go.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like to look into your child's eyes and see that, though.
Oh, I just see anger when I look into my child's eyes. I just see cleaning and hard work and all the times I have to say no to them. No, I'm kidding. My kids are awesome.
Yeah.
My daughter and I, just to prove that I'm not an asshole, my daughter has this thing where she comes and stands on a stool in the kitchen and we do this thing where she says, Dad, give me lots of hugs. And so she's standing on this stool in the kitchen and I come up beside her and I give her a hug from the side, then I give her a hug from the front, then a hug from the other side, then a hug from behind her, then we do an upside down hug. And she just giggles and loves it.
Yeah.
And says again, again, and we could do that all day.
Yeah.
She'd be happy doing that all day. That's an eternal moment,
it
Chris.
It is. That's an eternal moment. That's mindfulness. That's being in the present. It's being right there, which is, you know, what I think a lot of people are searching for when they say they're spiritual but not religious, is they're searching for something to feel in the present, to feel connected. Because it's, for me, it's within those things is where you find that something, that wonder that compels you to keep going in life.
So how do you find these moments? Do they just happen upon you, or do you have a certain way that you seek them out?
That's a good question.
I feel like a pastor asking that question.
Well, I seek them out for sure at times. Do I seek them out as much as I should? Probably not, because there's so many distractions in the world. That's why people are like, oh, I need mindfulness. I need something, because we just end up being these robots just going from one thing to another, and I can easily do that. I find it hard to sit here and not be doing something, whether that's playing a game, checking my phone, working on my fantasy football team, listening to music, listening to a podcast, doing some chores, taking the dog for a walk. And sometimes we just need to stop. And that's hard for people to do if you haven't done it before. You try and get young people to just sit quietly in solitude, it can freak them out. It does.
But, you know, like people share photos on Facebook saying, you know, could you live in this haunted house for a night for $1 million or something silly like that? Have you seen these sort of pictures?
Yeah.
There was another one I saw in the last week. It was a picture of like some tropical resort and it said, could you live here for a month without your phone? And I'm like, oh, yeah. What? Why not?
Yeah.
Where's the struggle there?
No struggle for me, really. No, I
obviously that's a freaked out thought for some people.
I know, it is. We used to run a camp, Nick, which was in this little valley in the middle of Tasmania. And because it was in this deep valley, there was no coverage, none at all. And the camp would go for 4 days. And so there's 4 days that I didn't have my phone. Oh, my God, what a relief that was. And the young people that we'd take on the camp, they'd be freaking out by the first day. And then they were fine after that.
And then at the end of it, they'd all talk about how good it was.
Yeah, because
not have their phone.
Well, yeah, because they had to connect with each other instead of their phone. Well, that's how they connect with each other normally, is through their phones. But
and there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
we're not anti-technology.
No, I'm not anti-socializing. It is socializing, but it is a different form that has its positives and negatives, and we're still learning how to deal with that, you know, bullying and stuff that young people just can't get away from it because it's 24 hours, it's there. So there's some differences in the younger generation than us oldies. Man, it was such a relief to get away from my phone for those 4 days and connect with others. Mostly it was we would stay up till 2 or 3 a.m. running a camp, talking like this. Hence, we ended up with a podcast like this because we missed those talks. Because that was something, a moment in time that mattered. Well, it's about being connected, isn't it?
Yeah.
Connected.
I think it's what I was talking about before. It's that the opposite of that feeling of loneliness.
Yeah. That's the best fellowship I've ever had, is that and the youth leaders that we had around us and stuff. I love that fellowship. I loved it also because we were doing something, helping people have an amazing experience and a challenging experience. And so often going to church doesn't feel like it's doing anything.
Yeah. How good would it be if we could turn church into, instead of we turn up on a Sunday morning and some old white man stands up the front telling us about a 2,000-year-old book, but instead we turn up every Sunday morning and we went and cleaned up the local park, or we went and did the gardening for an old lady who's just had to go to hospital. Imagine if that's what church was. I would be in that 100%.
Yeah, make it happen.
Yeah, all right. If you live in Longford, Tasmania, and you want to join me.
Look, churches do those sorts of things as well, but I guess it's just
how often.
And for me, I think that's why a lot of people are turning from the church, is they don't see it as relevant. How is it relevant to my community? How is it relevant to me? How is it relevant to the world? Especially if we're just sitting around talking about something that happened 2,000 years ago. I love to talk about what happened 2,000 years ago. I find it interesting, but that can't be all it is.
Well, it's only interesting if it is also at the same time talking about how we live our lives today. It's not just a history book.
As I was saying before, unless your spirituality or your faith or your values or whatever, unless they engage with the world, they're useless. One of Peter Rowlands's, who we like him a bit, one of his heroes that he reads is Paul Tillich. Paul Tillich said, if you want to find fulfillment in life, you have to find an ultimate concern. I don't know what my ultimate concern is. What's my ultimate concern?
That life is meaningless.
Yeah, that could be it. Fighting that idea that life is meaningless, that could be my ultimate concern. That's why I do what I do. Life has meaning.
Christopher Hitchens talks about this. All of us hate the idea that not only at some point are we going to leave this earth, but it's going to go on without us.
Yep.
That we're going to have to leave the party, but also it's going on without us.
Mm. Another thought just popped in my head. Things that are popping into my head, Nick. I didn't select it.
No.
Because I was thinking, we go back to the ground. One of the things I was reading was, how do we put God out of the picture, you know, and have this religionless sort of spirituality? And by doing that, live more fully before God than what we do if we go in with it with religion. Bonhoeffer was even questioning, is God all powerful, all the omnipotent, omniscient and stuff? Because often religion sort of has turned God into this machine, and religion then sells, you know, these tokens where we can pull levers and press buttons and get a response, you know. And so God's just this machine, whereas is God that all-powerful he was questioning? You know, if Jesus was God, Jesus, you know, was put on a cross. Jesus was taken out of the world, not in the sense that God is dead, but just that I think that was a way he was looking at what suffering, you know, how to deal with that question of suffering. How does God allow suffering? And that, so God's there in our suffering, essentially. God's down there with us. But anyway, so this idea of taking God away, because our religious ideas of God maybe need to be shaken up. So it's not looking at God as this being, but as the ground, because you were talking about the ground before that we all return to, but as the ground from which we all spring, and hence, I was just thinking, and all return to at some point.
Yeah. And in terms of...
But I like that image, yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of that and thinking about it from the perspective of not believing there's a God, because I think like what we talked about with Alain de Botton or whatever, thinking about how do we make this world worth living in without religion. Like one of the thoughts that I find really beautiful is that like, because one of the things about religion is eternal life, that after you die, that I still get to go on, that I don't just end and that's it. One of the things that I find really helpful is that like, everything that I am made of will still be here.
Yep.
Like I think of myself as being 30, crap, how old am I? 34, I think.
You do lose count. See, you're old. You're right. It's been a common theme
I'm
tonight.
I'm 17. That's what it is, Chris. I'm 17. Times two. Like I think of myself as being 34 when I remember.
Yeah.
But the truth is that every atom in my body is 13 point whatever billion years old.
Yeah.
Like every single one of them.
Yeah.
And when I die, they're all still going to be here.
Hmm.
So in a sense, we do live on forever. There's no atom in my body that will cease to exist. They'll all still be here.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that idea.
Yeah.
I really like the idea that when my consciousness ceases to exist, everything that matters will still be here. Not only will it be here, but it will be fueling the cycle of life. It'll be helping other creatures to come into existence or to continue their existence. And then, you know, it goes all the way up the food chain.
And you find
that's a really beautiful thought.
And
to
you
me.
Find meaning in that. If you find it beautiful, you find meaning in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked that little image before as looking at God not as this being that we talk to, but as the ground from which we spring. So in a sense, if we spring from that ground and we've all got God in us and we see God in each other and or we choose not to, and then we all do return to that.
Yep.
And if by return to that, you know, you go, well, that means eternal life and heaven. Well, okay, whatever. Because Peter Rollins, I guess he was summing up some stuff that Bonhoeffer had said by saying that God is not an object that you connect with. I said, God is the truth you discover in connecting with the world and with people and with doing things that matter. And I like that one too. And you can take the word God out and just put meaning or spirituality or whatever in, you know, that's fine. I'm drawn to that because I'm like, I don't want to see God as an object, but I also have trouble connecting with this thing that, you know, we've spoken about on previous podcasts, having this relationship with God. I mean, even some of religionless Christianity, some of the parts of that have tried to go up against the church by pitting themselves up against the churches, saying that a relationship with God is all that matters. The church doesn't matter. All your religious institutions and rituals don't matter. It's just a relationship with God. And I'm going, yeah, but that's still, I don't know, because that's,
prove it.
Yeah. So I'm drawn.
Prove you've got that relationship.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So I'm drawn to all these ideas, but there's conflict within me because if you're throwing God out, you know, are you doing the wrong thing? If you're walking away from the church, are you doing the wrong thing? If you're just picking and choosing from whole lots of wisdoms and religions and philosophies, are you cheapening something? So I have conflict, but that's, you know, I'm like, well, hold these beliefs lightly, be contemplative, search for these moments, connect with true self. I think that's what people are doing. I'm for it. I'm more for people figuring it out for themselves than I am for people telling people what they should believe.
Yeah. Well, if there really is only one true God,
yeah,
then picking and choosing is bad. because, you know, if it's the Christian God and you're picking stuff from lots of different religions and not taking some bits of Christianity, well, that's bad. But then if, you know, if that's the case, then you better hope you got the right God. Because if you think it's Christianity, but no, really, it's Zeus, well, you're still screwed. You know, there's something like 3,000 different religions out there.
I just, yeah, that whole falls apart for me. Just like, if there is one true God, then God existed before all religions, so religions are moot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, they can be helpful and unhelpful at the same time. And a lot of people are just not using religions anymore and are turning to spiritual but not religious.
And I think
some of the things they do are weird, though.
Who?
Some of the the whole spiritual but not religious stuff. But, you know, hey, I'm just as weird. I believe that, you know, some guy died on a cross and came back to life. That's not weird.
He wasn't just a guy, though. He was God. God can do whatever he wants, Chris.
And human. He's God and human at the same time.
Split personality.
Yeah.
Schizophrenic.
Well, no.
You're Tasmanian with two heads?
No. Well, all of us have got the self we think we are, the self we are, the self other people see. We're all this sort of jumble of...
No, there's no self.
Or there's no self. Then what the heck are you, Nick? If What are you?
Well, I'm a collection of atoms, aren't I?
Yeah. I love that whole concept. Brian Cox says, we are the cosmos made conscious and life is the means by which the universe understands itself. How cool is that?
That's a very atheistic statement though, Chris.
But if there wasn't life, no
meaning. It'd still be God though, wouldn't it?
No meaning though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like the word life is like the word breath. You know, life and God are essentially the same thing, you know. And I'm amazed when I just, well, not all the time, because most of the time it just passes me by, but I'm amazed when I notice the life around me and then notice that it's everywhere. And sometimes it's so much everywhere that it's really annoying because the grass is too long and the cockroaches find their way inside the house and, you know, but but this planet that we live on is just crawling with life and it just gets in everywhere and it doesn't stop. It's this awesome power and in so many forms. So whether that was an accident or made, either way, it's just bewildering and amazing. Are we the only life in the universe? Because I can't imagine how that would be, because life gets in everywhere, you know, just given the right conditions, it just flourishes.
And the size of our universe.
I'm like going, it has to be everywhere, doesn't it?
Well, not everywhere. Calm down.
No, not everywhere. But I mean, it has to be.
It's almost nowhere.
I mean, there has to be a lot of life. It's just got to be.
There's no time travelers though, Chris. We know this.
We know this because?
Well, in memory of that legend Stephen Hawking who passed away, he held a party for time travellers and no one turned up. He held a party like where he had, you know, champagne and stuff, and he didn't tell anyone on Earth, but he, I don't know how he did it, but he recorded the time and the date in a whole bunch of different ways that in theory will go on for a long time. And no one turned up, so no one knocked on the door.
That's a great idea. I love it.
Yeah. Disappointing, though. Disappointing end.
So how are we going to end a discussion about spiritual but not religious? I keep trying to take up meditation. I keep failing.
No, there's no such thing as failure, Chris. It's just another step on the journey.
I'm going to take a few more steps.
How are you doing it? Talk to me.
No.
I'll guide you.
It's embarrassing.
Because I don't do it either.
It's embarrassing.
I don't mind embarrassing.
All right. So I've got this app on my phone.
Yeah, which one?
The Headspace app.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've set a time aside each day that it will notify me that it's time to...
You are trying.
Yeah, yeah. So I set this time and it notifies me and it goes, bing, and there's my notification. Oh, it's time for you to do some meditation. And I go...
Fuck off, I'm busy, Headspace.
I go flick and... Yeah,
that's good.
I'm really trying. Yeah, I'm trying so hard.
Well, you're headed in the right direction. Well, possibly. Who knows? It's like eating vegetables. Like, you know you're meant to do it, but it's not fun. Like, I'm reading this book at the moment. I don't know what you can see. I need to bring up Skype.
Waking Up by Sam Harris. Searching for spirituality without religion. Nice. Cool.
Like, well, I've talked about him before.
Yeah.
Like, he spent 2 years on silent meditation retreats. Mm. Like, he talks about meditation not as a chore, but as like this transformational thing. Like, I enjoy it when I do it, but I don't have the motivation to do it. it's like what we've talked about before about there's often social situations where you've been invited to dinner somewhere and you're like, oh, I really don't want to go. And then you get there and you enjoy it.
Yeah.
But then the next time it comes up again, you'll still be like, oh, I really don't want to go. I think it is about forcing yourself is the wrong word, but it's the first one that comes to mind. Like, it's about getting into a routine where it's just part of your daily life. And I'm not there. I'm definitely not there.
For me, that's, again, going back to being connected to who you truly are and knowing what you truly appreciate and desire and then turning that into the person that you're being so that you do go and do that. So it does become your habit instead of all of the false sort of things that you've surrounded yourself or that you've cluttered yourself with. So for me, I feel very cluttered and overwhelmed and distracted. You ask me, am I seeking those moments, that spiritual sort of moment? And I do from time to time. I don't know. Maybe I just run into them. Maybe I'm not seeking them so much and I just they just sort of hit me. But I find them mostly, I guess I find them when I'm deep in conversation with someone, often a young person, and just recognizing that, oh, here I am. I'm in whatever room this is, sitting down, feet grounded, gravity pulling me down. Here I am on this planet that's pulling me to it, and I'm here. A being made of atoms that are how many billions of years old? Whatever.
13.
There you go. 13 billion years old. I'm this consciousness that, you know, the cosmos made to understand the universe. Here I am across from this other person who is also made of that stuff. And maybe we're both in a situation of contemplation, deep in conversation. We're two people that have sprung forth out of the ground. And in this vast universe, here we are face to face. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. How cool is that?
Imagine the odds.
And so I find what Thomas Merton talked about, that, you know, the light is coming from this other person. You know, it's like, oh, wow, here we are. How cool that we get life. Life is this amazing thing. Yeah, I'm drawn to this stuff more than I am religion.
As in your definition of religion or mine? Like the idea of a structure or a worldview that connects with the transcendent?
I could classify myself under that sort of idea of religion. It's more, you know, I'm not drawn to organized religion. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm wrestling with, do I need to move further into this sort of religionless Christianity idea, which is almost a godless Christianity idea? Maybe my being is drawn to it. And that's why I didn't mind when you walked away from Christianity, because you're still seeking, you're still spiritual, you're still contemplative.
And also, you and I don't have this notion of a judgmental God who's going to send Nick to hell if he walks away.
No.
If you had that view of God, well, then you would be freaked out if your friend stopped believing.
I have found it interesting because I think, you know, what you, in a sense, choose to believe informs your values and the things that you think about. So I've seen changes in you. So it's not just that, oh, I just dropped this thing and I'm still going along being how I was being. There have been changes. And
so you think right-wing Nick is connected to irreligious Nick?
I wonder, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, I can't say that you're not discovering more of the way I sort of see it, as in your real self over your false self. I can't say that that's not happening. So maybe you're on a journey that you're meant to be on.
Well, there's no other journey I could be on.
I was just thinking that. I'm like going, yeah. But it all comes back to, you know, this whole spirituality thing is, you know, you can get very involved in self and that can turn into self-interest. So unless it engages with the world, has meaning and purpose, I think that's what people are looking for. I often feel like depression and stuff is like this lack of meaning and purpose and place in the world and this lack of being present within this wonder and life that's just everywhere.
Mm.
So I think spirituality is really important.
It's one of the fascinating things about mindfulness, I think, is that it's not about getting away from your thoughts, but focusing your thoughts on one individual thing, like your breath, can actually create a more content mindset. It's a fascinating thing that it's just focusing it on one individual thing, trying to encourage your brain to pause for a second and stop that whirlwind of thoughts that goes on in your brain constantly.
Yeah.
Just focusing on your breath can just improve your well-being significantly.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing.
It is something that we need more in our lives, is that stillness, that solitude, to be able to sort of contemplate and feel connected. For some people, it's meditation. For some people, I don't know, it might be surfing. For others, it's going for a bush walk. But it's about making the time for that to be an important part of your daily or weekly or whatever experience. And I mean, some people go away on retreats or sabbaticals or something as well. You know, there are different ways that you can try and be contemplative or meditative. But finding somewhere that works for you, and that might be a special place, the place that you love being, that you feel most relaxed, or a place that means something to you. I've got a couple of special places, but they're down in your part of the world.
Sydney's too busy.
Yeah.
Although I think we've talked in the past about a real fascinating experience for me is going to Melbourne and just sitting in Federation Square and just like watching hordes of people just like passing by and going about their jobs and just going, whoa, this is really weird.
Yeah, I remember being when I lived in Brisbane. I remember sitting on this sort of little hill overlooking where people would walk, and there was like a bend of a freeway coming past, and I would sit there and contemplate and just go, now, if I was an alien and I just landed here, what would I think of all this?
Yeah.
What would I think was going on here? Because it was fascinating to me. I'd sit there and watch it. I may have been on drugs, but
yeah, we've already talked about that.
Yeah, so even a busy place, you can find stillness.
And wonder and awe.
Yeah. I need to find a place, Nick. I need to find my zone here because I think I need it.
It's strange to me because you know quite a few people in Western Sydney who are in your orbit of belief, aren't there?
Most of the people that I know are spiritual but not religious. They don't go to church. There are some that still do go to church, and I sort of go like, why? But they still see value in that, and I saw value in that for a long time, and I may see value in that again one day. But that's one of the things that we talked about, one of the things that it's not just stillness and solitude, but it's fellowship. Fellowship is one thing that we need. It helps us not feel lonely. It helps us belong. It can challenge us. It can keep us accountable. You know, like I found the fellowship with you on this podcast, Nick, has been more rewarding to my journey with spirituality than going to church would have been. I feel like that's the case. I may be wrong, but I feel like that's the case because it's challenged me to really think, why do I believe the things I do? And I found your fellowship helpful and frustrating. Like Ruby said it, something along the lines of it needs to be uncomfortable to grow. Change is going to be uncomfortable. So that's another thing that I do seek out, is I do put myself in situations in life that compel me to have habits which I think I need, because my inclination would be to not do anything and be a hermit.
I think I've found a real joy in talking with people even when I disagree with them, or even especially when I disagree with them. And not in a combative way, but in a, like, I really respect you and Ruby as people, and I love chatting with you guys. Like, I love it. I feel like it pushes me to better get to know what my views are, and it pushes me to better understand the world from another perspective. Both of those things are really important. I wouldn't enjoy them anywhere near as much as if I was just talking to someone that I agreed with all the time. That'd be boring.
It'd be more comfortable.
Your life, my life, they're plenty comfortable.
They are. Yeah, really. We need to sort of sort ourselves out. We need fellowship, and we need to engage with the world. I think unless we have an impact on the world, and there's a part of that which maybe that works better if it's done collectively. That becomes problematic then, because it can become tribal, and I don't know how we sort all that out, but we need to wrap it up.
Yeah. So if you see Chris in the next week, ask him if he's been meditating.
Or ask me if I've joined the church community yet, like that teacher does.
Yeah.
If you see Nick, kick him in the nuts for me. No.
I've actually been learning a lot about kicking people in the nuts.
How come?
That's what I do on a Tuesday night.
So you're doing some self-defense training or something? Or martial arts or what?
Called a Krav Maga.
You know, a lot of people do martial arts stuff as form of spirituality as well.
Yeah, this one's not.
Oh, but it's, you know, it's being in touch with, connected to your body, being able to know where it is in space and time, and, you know, how to move it in space and time. And I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go do like an Aikido or something like that, or Tai Chi if you want to do that.
Yeah.
This one's just more about beating the shit out of people.
Okay.
It's really fun. I do it with this like 60-year-old lady. It's awesome. She's like getting me in headlocks and stuff like that.
All right. So whatever works for you, we hope that you can find – I just hope that you find your meaning and your purpose, and enjoy the journey.
if you think Chris and I are destined for hell, feel free to pray. I'm not at all against you praying for me. Go for it. Because if there is a God and if he does listen to you, brilliant. I mean, you're probably wasting your time, but what's that matter to me?
Catch you on the flip side or when we all return to the ground.
What happens to these sound waves?
What's happening with your sound waves? Don't tell me something's gone wrong.
No. What happens to them when we're returned to the ground? Are they still here?
Yeah, we're making something that's going to outlive us, Nick.
We'll go on. So will you.
Cheerio.
Peace.
I'm out.
God here again. Are you shaking your head incredulously or nodding in approval? Well, if you got something out of this episode, you could really help those poor idiots by contributing to or supporting the Eternity Ward. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. You can share it on social media or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, send a hallelujah. I don't know, but don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comments section, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward. We'll be right back.